This episode of the Star Wars Report is brought to you by the fine folks who are supporting us over at patreon.com/StarWarsReport. We do thank those who are making this show happen. And also, it's brought to you by StarWarsReport.com/podcast survey. Let your voice be heard. We're taking our 2016 annual listener survey, so let us know what you want from the show, what you don't like, what you do like, and what you want to see in the future. But without further ado, let's get into episode 211 of the Star Wars Report podcast. There's so much going on. So much going on in the world of Star Wars today, ladies and gentlemen. It's just insanity. Rogue One's getting underway. We're hearing more and more news from episode 8, and we're getting rumors on the behind the scenes, but first, we're talking Disney.
Falcon flight with destiny, headlong into the pie. Birds of a feather well weathered together, chasing the dark from the night.
Holy Banthas! Woo! It's the Star Wars Report podcast, folks. Welcome, welcome. We've got a great show for you tonight. Let's do it. Oh, man. I'm so excited to have a jam-packed show for you guys. I'm Riley Blanton, the host of this here podcast. Welcome, welcome. If you're new to the program, well, the Star Wars Report is a podcast, and it's about Star Wars, and it's the most fun hour of Star Wars broadcasting that's happened since the last hour of Star Wars broadcasting. Look at that. That's coming in hot. Making a strong stand on those claims. No, folks, we are so happy that you've tuned in. Welcome, welcome to everyone who's in the live chat. Thank you so much for coming in. I want to bring him in. He's the co-host of the podcast here, and my good friend and yours. It's Mr. Marcus James Eustace Herleman. How's it going, Mark?
Oh, it's going good for this Bothan baller. How we doing out there, everybody? It's so good to be back. It really is, man. So good. It feels like forever since I was here. I've been out with scouts on Hoth.
I know. You've been busy. You have been very busy. Did any of your escapades with the great organization that is the Boy Scouts, and this again, camping, man, I don't get it. I've done it quite a bit. Still don't get it. But
see,
you're out there freezing your butt off.
ROTC stuff, this would be like right up your ball game, man.
Listen, listen, Mark. As a guy who literally spent 2 weeks at a simulated forward operating base at Air Force Basic Training for ROTC, known as field training, I can tell you I have had plenty of an experience in the outdoor weather with not enough of the comforts of civilized society. And I can say I've gotten my taste of it. I'm willing to face it head on. But I also understand its discomfort. Let's get down to the brass tacks. We got a quick announcement, and then we're going to bring in a very special guest. But before we do either of those two things, did any of your adventure involve slicing open a Tauntaun?
No.
Or a squirrel.
It did not. But I did slice open some snow caves, though. That was fun.
Nice. Well done, sir. Well, I'm so glad to have you back, Mark. We got a great show, and I want to do a quick announcement right at the top. Won't take too much of your time, but if you have a free moment, what you want to do right now is go to StarWarsReport.com/podcast survey. In fact, that's what I'm going to do right now. StarWarsReport.com, type that in, /podcast survey. And I've got a nice little pretty link. It takes you to an easy-to-fill-out Google form with about 5 or 6 questions. It's that easy. We want some ideas on the direction of the show, some ideas for new content, what you do like, what you don't like, the length of the show, who you want to see on the show. What kind of new things are you interested in? It's our annual survey. We started it last year, and it's back here in 2015. Let your voice be heard, and go to, again, StarWarsReport.com/podcast survey. But there's been some news.
We have something to report.
Come closer, I have good news.
Data brought to us by the Bothan spies.
You can send a clear transmission.
There it is. Listen.
There's been an awakening, a disturbance in the force of sorts, at least in the force of Disney. Recently, ABC broadcasted a 60th anniversary special for Disneyland to commemorate quite a few amazing things that have happened. They had special guests. Dick Van Dyke was dancing up there on stage like a boss. But more importantly, we saw freaking Han Solo announce some new details, and here to talk about it is Mr. Al John Go, a.k.a. the Jedi Mouseketeer. How's it going, Al John?
What's going on, Riley? Mark, how are you? Broadcasting live here from Walt Disney World, believe it or not. Like, Can you imagine?
Believe me, Al John, when I emailed you this week, I knew that you are a big Disney fan. I knew that you are a big Star Wars fan. I knew that you were the guy to talk about this announcement. I also did not know that you'd be so dedicated that you just wanted to get in the mood for the podcast, and so you decided to go all the way to Walt Disney World so that you could report from the ground. That's what I hear, right?
That's exactly where we're at right now. We're actually here at the Animal Kingdom Lodge. We're going to be celebrating. Some of my friends have Disney by the Numbers, the webcast, and the Disney Parks podcast, celebrating a little bit of an anniversary. So we here at Jedi Mouseketeer and Sorcerer Radio Network decided to drive on down, cover the Epcot International Flower and Garden Festival this morning, and then tomorrow party and do a bunch of periscoping all day tomorrow with a bunch of our fans. And I'm so honored that you would, you know, ask me to be on your show. Of course, love the show. It was great meeting you a couple years back at a meetup there at Walt Disney World. It was awesome. So,
no, absolutely. It was great to see you, sir. And I'll tell you what, it's Disney. There's a special appeal for Star Wars fans, and especially in recent years. And I'm one of those. I feel like I'm a good case of the many Star Wars fans that you know liked Disney, that grew up watching Disney films, but weren't really into the whole monstrosity that is the Disney community, especially the Disney Parks community. And that's why you're really in on the ground floor, and that's why I'm really excited to have you here to talk about it. So let's not beat around the bush. Let us know. So what was the special? What was it celebrating? And what does it mean for Star Wars fans?
Well, basically, the Disneyland 60th anniversary was just a really great way just to celebrate the legacy of the Disney parks, starting with Walt's park. You know, Dick Van Dyke, as you were talking about, you had all the great announcements, all the great musical performances. But as it pertains to Disney, a lot of great things were revealed. A lot of this stuff, some of this stuff actually, was revealed to us at the D23 Expo this past summer of 2015. We knew that this was going to be happening. We knew the park was going to be transforming, but how big was this going to be? Well, it's going to be actually really huge. Now, before we get started, you know, the Disneyland over there in Anaheim versus Walt Disney World here in Orlando, two separate parks. And according to my sources, they will not be necessarily cloning the park experiences in terms of rides and things like that for both parks. They will be uniquely big experiences. So that is something new that we're breaking news in terms of the, you know, here on your show, the Star Wars Report.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that is something I just found out about today. So there are two different maps that I'm going to bring up on my iPhone. And like I said, I'm apologizing that I'm not on my normal studio setup. I'm here actually in the lobby of the Animal Kingdom Lodge as I talk to you now. But I'm bringing up the Disneyland Park Star Wars expansion. Updated maps have over there by the Fantasmic Storage, past Frontierland and Critter Country. We know that the barbecue, the Big Thunder Ranch barbecue, has gone away. Mm-hmm. But we actually have tentative names for some of these attractions. Battle Escape attraction, you heard Harrison Ford talk about how the First Order, as well as the Resistance, are going to be battling it out, and you, as a attraction goer, will be stuck in the middle of this battle. So we call it the Battle Escape attraction. That is kind of a tentative name for it. We also know that the Millennium Falcon attraction that was going to be kind of talked about and debuted there with Harrison Ford is actually going to be an interesting attraction. A lot of people said that it was going to be based on ride technology similar to Star Tours or the Spider-Man attraction at Universal Studios. I have a different take on it. I believe, and I mentioned this on my other podcast, WDW After Dark, that it's going to be a KUKA arm type of attraction, but on a much larger scale, similar to what they have at Harry Potter for the Gringotts ride currently. Okay. So it's going to be a really cool experience, you know, with, you know, two to four people riding perhaps in getting into that cockpit of the legendary Millennium Falcon. So that's going to be there. That is the second of those big attractions. There's also going to be a pre-show queue in there as well, and room for future expansion behind that queue over there by the Fantasmic Storage area past Critter Country. There's also a Battle Escape queue with X-Wings as well. So there's going to be like real, you know, life-size, or I guess you could say real-scale X-Wing fighter. At least there, you saw that from the concept art. We also understand that it's going to be a one-to-one scale replica of the Millennium Falcon that's going to be on display at both parks.
All right, slow clap.
So my understanding is that people are going to have an opportunity to tour the Millennium Falcon in its one-to-one scale, which is going to be great, as well as have interactions with fully costumed characters. During Star Wars weekends, Riley, and you guys have seen this, you know, you've interacted with Kit Fisto, you've interacted with versions of Anakin Skywalker, Ahsoka Tano, you know, Zam Wessel, all those, you know, prequel and prequel characters, and of course, mask characters in there as well, Darth Vader, Boba Fett, Jango Fett, and that will also continue. There was artist renderings that everyone saw in there as well of a lot of great costumed experiences. Two dining experiences that are very unique. You have a cantina, which is reminiscent to the cantina, of course, in Tatooine over there. And then you also have what looks like a sit-down dining restaurant experience that looks similar to, and I said this at our other show too, is it looks very similar to what Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin ran into in Coruscant, that kind of bar. And
The Outlander Club.
The Outlander Club, yeah, very similar to that. And it looked like, you know, there was some, I guess, Kit Fisto-like, I'm trying to, you see, my Star Wars friends going downhill.
That would be a Nautilin, I think is what
you're saying. Nautilin, yes, a Nautilin, swimming around in a fish tank, you know. There may be some things like that art as well. And if you know anything about Walt Disney World, you know that they are no stranger to large fish tanks and live people swimming in them. So that could definitely be a possibility. So I'm very excited about that. I'm really hoping my wife, who writes for, you know, her website, diningatdisney.com, actually had speculated about Aunt Beru's brew, the blue milk brew that they might actually be serving there at the cantina. That should be cool. Biff Band is going to be there. Who knows if it's going to be the modal nodes. We can only hope that Figrin Dan gets out of his current contract and he's able to come and entertain the fans, the throngs of fans that are going to be there as well. A lot of different gift shops in there, but it looks to me that as this is going to be built, we will have the X-Wings, we will have the Battle Escape attraction, we will have a tour of the Millennium Falcon with the Millennium Falcon type of pre-show, village dining, meet and greet attraction locations as well, and future expansion. There was talk at the D23 convention about 4 years ago of a Jedi scooter kind of speeder bike attraction that may still be happening, because as Disney does, they usually have a really big A-ticket thrill ride, as well as a ride meant for families, and maybe also a ride meant for the children. So that's usually how it rolls. But that is, once again, speculation that has not been confirmed. Now, in terms of, that was Disneyland. Now, in terms of Walt Disney World.
I'm sorry, sir. I have to get out another sheet of paper here. I'm overwhelmed
this
already.
This is a lot of stuff. This is a lot of stuff that we're talking about. Really quickly, Walt Disney World, it looks like the expansion for Star Wars Land, or the what we call now the Star Wars Experience, which is also kind of a tentative name, placeholder name. But it looks like it's going to be taking up at least a good third, if not more, of the park itself. We know that Lights Motors Action, the Extreme Stunt Show Spectacular, is going to be living its final days. So it's going to be closing down soon.
Oh, no!
Muppet Vision 3D is also, saying sayonara,
right,
but
I'm
going
to interject very briefly. I apologize, just going to interject really briefly, because you're doing, Aljon, this is way better than I could have possibly hoped for, just briefly.
Okay.
Because I will, all right, Riley's take. The Disney nuts, as I've been known to say. Like, I don't get it. I don't understand the sheer level of passion, and then I just realize something. And I've had various versions of this admission before, as I've slowly become a convert, and now find myself on the other side of the fence. And that is, as you are naming these rides, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking of the wonderful times I've had with friends and family going to these rides for the first time in the last 2 years. Like, 2 years ago was the first time I ever went to Disney, ever.
That is so cool.
And now I'm finding myself like, there's the even though I'm the biggest Star Wars fan ever, like when I hear Muppet Vision 3D is dying and I think about all the good times, there's a part of my poor little childlike brain that is just sad. And then I realized I am one of these people now.
You are. You both are. You and Mark both. And let me tell you something. Just because I am saying that Muppet Vision in its current status may be shut down, it doesn't mean they won't relocate it to another place at Walt Disney World, maybe toward the Tower of Terror or Hollywood Boulevard area. So there, all
which
may not
make
be
sense.
Lost. Yeah, all may not be lost, but the Muppet, you know, the Muppets could even be moved into the area that is American Idol, because American Idol, as you know, is already shut down. Sound Dangerous over there at Hollywood Studios is shut down. So there's a whole area there that could reintroduce the Muppets in a new, fresh way that coincides with the Muppets TV show, where they have a late night talk show instead of the Muppet Theater. So there may be a new thing that I'm speculating that might happen to kind of freshen up the Muppets experience there. But I don't believe they're going to give up or abandon the Muppets at the Disney parks. So having said that, the expansion is going to take place right where the Star Tours is going to be. It's going to go all the way back into the streets of America, overtaking Muppets, overtaking Lights, Motors, Action, and the backstage tour all the way toward the back to where the current hangar launch bay is right now.
Wow.
The Pixar area is going to expand as well, but this is quite significant. And you can expect that even though I don't have names for the tentative attractions, I believe they will once again also have a 1-to-1 scale Millennium Falcon, a 1-to-1 scale X-Wing fighter, probably geared toward the type of what you've seen in The Force Awakens. So, you know, maybe a rebellion, I say rebellion, but the resistance, you know, hangar bay kind of area, and probably an Imperial, or I should say a first order base as well. Maybe some semblance of a first order slash Starkiller-esque type of base. So it's a lot to take in. It's a lot of construction.
Somewhere Domhnall Gleeson is just going to be standing on top of a giant building like where the streets of America are and be saying, "We shall not bow to disorder."
But I believe the food offerings are also going to be very similar. But I don't think Disney is really going to clone experiences from one park to the next. And I also believe in Shanghai they probably will also have plans, as well as Disney parks overseas, to have Star Wars in some way, shape, or form, at least over the next 15 years, slowly start transforming those parks into sections with the Star Wars characters and having unique experiences in all of those parks with new technologies and things of that nature. So, you know, it's just a really good time to enjoy this honeymoon period of these great announcements, and understand that Disney and the Disney parks in general are fully committed to bringing the world of Star Wars the level of immersement that only Disney can provide. And I'm just really excited about it. And I know that Bob Iger has extended his presidency of the Walt Disney Company as a whole several years, I believe, because of the promise he made to George Lucas to make sure that he shepherds in the proper experiences, not only for the film franchise and the animation, but also for the parks. And I believe that's going to be his last thing before he leaves the presidency of the Walt Disney Company.
They need to just keep the man around for forever. He needs to be the Dick Van Dyke of actual Disney.
Well, I am a big fan of Bob Iger. I believe that his story is one of passion, one of understanding business, but also understanding how important it is to secure the future for these properties, whether it be Marvel, Pixar, Muppets, and of course Lucasfilm and the Star Wars and Indiana Jones franchises. And I don't think he's going to steer us wrong. I think he's really dedicated, and the people in upper management are really dedicated to making sure that all Star Wars fans have a fun and exciting experience for decades to come. So That's kind of my long, short analysis of it all.
That's amazing. And no, this is perfect.
It's pretty cool.
And Aljon, I've got to – so I'll follow up with a couple quick questions before we have to let you go and just say, like –
Of course.
So here's the thing on top of everyone's mind. This sounds amazing. Like, again, folks, recap. We're getting, like, this – the Battle Escape, immerse yourself in a First Order versus – resistance battle. A life-size Millennium Falcon that you can actually tour around. I mean, that in and of itself, but not only just that, we're getting, you can go to the cantina and order drinks. You can look to your left and see the robot friend who can't enter the cantina, and they're like, well, we don't serve their kind. And you're like, well, that's okay, because I'm not their kind. You can be that guy. You can walk into the cantina. You can see a life-size X-Wing. You can go
to the... I never even met these droids before, man.
You can go to the Outlander bar, although I imagine they might make it a little bit more family-friendly in terms of the garb, in terms of the Outlander
bar. I gotta admit, I'm surprised they're going Outlander and not Dexter's Diner. Unless... like, they're going to have Dexter's Diner, like a breakfast-dinner kind of place.
Well, you never know. There is already a 50s primetime diner that is there at Walt Disney World, and who's to say that they don't have some type of a place like that where you might be able to see those type of characters move around. You just never know with Disney.
You, like, come down on Tuesdays for Dex's Days, where we flip a switch and convert it all.
Yeah, exactly. Dex's Days, where he serves greasy hamburgers. That would be awesome.
Yeah, nice. So that is amazing.
Myself one of those saber dart fries.
Exactly.
They're
right.
Cloners and damn good ones. I love that voice, by the way. That was always so much
too.
Fun. But okay, so like, here's the question on everyone's mind: timeline. When do we hear this stuff officially? Like, when we finally get these details officially, and when can we actually experience this ourselves?
Well, I believe right now stuff is being shut down, and the current project that is taking precedence is actually James Cameron's World of Avatar, Pandora, the World
no,
of Avatar.
Boo.
I know.
Boo,
so
this man.
I believe we're at least 2 years out from anything actually coming to fruition. They may decide they will open up that area in phases, but I believe that they're going to do what they did and model their opening very much like Cars Land did for Disney California Adventure. Mm-hmm. So I believe that, 2018 will probably be a very good year for Disney parks.
Wow.
And
that
Star
is,
Wars fans.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It's too long to wait.
I don't mean to interrupt, but understand that there has been no actual date set for the opening of the Star Wars experience, but we can only speculate that it's going to come probably spring of 2018. That's just my guess.
I mean, there's a certain level. I'm sure they, in some ways, they winced that they weren't able to. If you're Bob Iger, just as, again, the businessman knows, it's a shame that it didn't, like, open up within the weeks of the movie opening, right? That would have been perfect if you could have gone to Disney and experienced things directly from The Force Awakens. But then, of course, the man who appreciates the story and the, not just the story of Star Wars, but the story of Disney, is the man who knows that you've got to do this right. And if you want to experience the Millennium Falcon and take a tour of it, that needs to be a pitch perfect childhood defining experience. And so I'm glad they're taking their time. I'm glad that it sounds like they're on the right track, and of course I can't wait to actually go experience it in person. 2018 can't be here soon enough.
Well, once again, like I said, it's just speculation, so don't take my word for it, but I do believe that with the new Star Wars movie, not Rogue One, but with Episode 8 coming down the road, I think that would be serendipitous if they were able to get their stuff together to coincide with the launch of that film. Last but not least, I just want to mention this to you and Mark. I actually was there at the D23 Legend ceremony when George Lucas was inducted as a legend.
Oh, no
and
way.
That,
awesome.
The day before that happened, he and I actually went to the Tiki Room experience, the Tiki Room show, with him and his family. He was sitting right next to me, and for people that think that George Lucas is not a Disney fan, let me tell you something. I feel that George is a little bit sour because he built this empire, pardon the pun, from scratch, and it's kind of like letting one of his kids go mm-hmm. off to college. But I will say this, that he really enjoys the Disney parks. You know, Disney and Star Wars has had such a long 30-35 year relationship of having Star Tours in the parks from Michael Eisner to Bob Iger. And he sat down with the enjoyment of a child, listening and watching not only his child and his family enjoy the Tiki experience, but so many other things there in the park. You know, he loves Disney. He's been a fan of Disney since day one. And I don't think that he couldn't be more proud and happy that the franchise and the parks are are treating his franchise with the utmost care and respect. So I just wanted to tell you all that from someone that actually experienced an attraction with George Lucas, sitting next to him and my friends and my family and his family there at Disneyland before his induction as a Disney legend. So I just wanted to relay that to you all and just say that I think you get, you know, the Star Wars franchise is in good hands. Take it from one fan, lifelong fan of Disney, Star Wars, and Marvel. I'm so happy to see it all under one roof so we can all geek out together.
That's amazing.
Well said.
Aljon, thank you. That is so incredible. Thank you so much for taking some time while you're at a freaking Disney park to talk to us on this podcast. I have one question for you.
Thank you for having me. You're the best.
Oh, absolutely. Before we go, I have one question. Can you be the official Star Wars Report podcast Disney boyfriend? Like, can this be a thing?
I am there for you guys anytime you need me. You give me a buzz and I'll be there. Trust me.
Absolutely.
You know, we're friends of the Force.
Absolutely. We'll be in touch for sure, especially as more of these developments come to fruition. We'll be in touch. Aljon Goh, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
May the Force be with you.
This is the Star Wars Report Podcast. John Williams is the man.
Some odd years after Star Wars, to do number 7, I felt, you know, very happy to be able to continue adding to this glossary of themes. JJ did speak to me about the feeling we would all want to have that this is Star Wars.
All we need is John Williams and then this dot.
And particularly connected, if we could, to the earlier films. We have Leia and we have Han and Luke revisited here. There are references to earlier thematic connections between characters and music and so on. And that seemed a very natural thing to do. And combine it with new melodic material for the new characters. Rey, her theme has a musical grammar that is not heroic in the sense of a hero's theme. It's kind of an adventure theme that maybe promises more than resolving itself in the most major triumphant resolutions. When we first meet her, she's been alone, she's without her parents. I felt a lot of empathy for that girl. And I think Rey's theme needs to illustrate that. I approached the task of Kylo Ren really just as an extension of Darth Vader in a way.
Show me again the power of the darkness.
And I didn't want to get too close to it. But if it could convey in a few short notes, as the Imperial March does, this evil power, strength, threat. Needs to be something that will hit you and it's accessible right away.
1M1, take 756.
When we recorded the opening and closing of the very first Star Wars film, I didn't have any idea there would be a second one. None of us had any idea that we'd ever hear the music again. Played the music with the orchestra, the beginning and the end. It was a celebratory moment for them and for me and JJ. It was like visiting an old friend. Having kept up with them this long, I have to say that I just feel very grateful.
Ah, so good. That's a new feature from StarWars.com with John Williams going over the score from The Force Awakens. And I was going to pull out a clip so we could talk about it a little bit, but it stands on its own. I just wanted to play the whole thing.
Speaking of clips,
it's amazing.
Though, you know, I was just watching the show last night. I took a coworker, and it was amazing to me how, you know, some of my favorite moments are the moments when the music just stops and like they know exactly when to do it. And they did it when Ray's first introduced it. She does that drop down from the rope. And I love the fact that because there's no music there, there's a gravitas to that scene. It's like she jumps out, grabs that rope, and you're just like, oh man, she would have missed that. And then you kind of, you know, out on my, I don't know, 17th or 22nd watching, I don't know what, I've lost count. I was thinking, I'm like, man, is that another sign of her force using right there? I mean, like, she just like no second thoughts whatsoever. Just zoop, she's right on that rope and down she goes with all that gear. I'm like, man, I'd have fallen at least once.
Well, and that moment of pause is what's so important. Star Wars movies are fast paced and they have to be. But any great film has a moment to pause and really take in the scenery, take in the character moments. And that's something that The Force Awakens does so well. And John Williams is the guy that knows how to punctuate that perfectly. And as he mentioned in the video, what I love about Rey's theme is that it is an incomplete theme. You don't feel like you've heard everything. You don't feel like you've heard all the movements. And maybe that's the case. Maybe we'll hear a little bit more in Episode 8 if... Lord, please give us John. Let's all pause for a moment and say a deep prayer to whatever deity you believe in, and just say, dear Lord, please give us John Williams for Episode 8, because the man is a genius, and I don't want him to retire. Don't retire, John Williams. Don't retire. We've got a list
just
of potential.
Crank it out.
Exactly. We've got a list of special features, potential special features. It's not official. This is for Making Star Wars for The Force Awakens Blu-ray. There's a Swedish website called Sidan.com, and they have what they call the pre-order for Star Wars The Force Awakens. Looks like to be a two-disc set, although we heard some rumors on a three-disc Blu-ray, so maybe that's they have a DVD with it. But for this one, the features are on the second of the two discs. Of course, this is not official, but this is what they list. So we'll see if this is turns out to be true. And let's I'm just going to hit you with a special feature. And Mark, there are going to be three responses you can give me. You can give me... Are you ready? Okay, this is going to be an interesting little game. You can give me... I was trying to think of like foods in Star Wars and which ones would progressively taste better or worse, but it really depends. Like, are death sticks great or terrible? It depends on your perspectives. But we'll say the absolute worst. You're going to have three ratings as to whether you, how good you think
poo-doo.
The special. Okay, of course, poodoo's the worst. That's an easy one. We're going to go blue milk in the middle, right? And then death sticks, while not healthy.
Carillion ale, man.
Okay, Carillion ale. Fair enough. All right, so we got poodoo, we've got blue milk, and Carillion ale. Give me your reaction in one word, and then we'll talk about them. First one, you ready? Ready for it, sir?
All right. Let's
all right. The story awakens. The table read.
Blue milk.
Okay, that's a fair middling. There's a nice response, like interest, but maybe
it
not
sounds good
blown
at first.
Away.
You know, the story awakens,
it
and then
might just
the table
be
read. I'm like,
Carrie Fisher going crazy for 40 minutes, so it's a good point.
And that could be gold. Like, if it turns out to be like Cheers, where they're just ragging on each other for a moment. I mean,
it's Harrison Ford sitting there going, oh, Carrie, for the love of God, Carrie. all right, so second, are you ready? Number two,
yeah.
Building BB-8.
Carillion ale.
Oh.
I really hope they put a lot to this, because again, I was watching this for like my 22nd time last night, and I'm watching BB-8, and the way his head spins, it's like that bottom disc that sits on the ball stays stationary, and it's like there's so many moving parts on that little guy. I would be impressed to see, you know, if they had different versions of him to do different things, like they would do with Kit for Knight Rider, or if they really had one that was just, you know, like the R2 Swiss Army knife of BB-8.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's that'll be an interesting one. It is a feat of engineering, and you can't take it away. The probably one of the biggest highlights at Celebration of that main panel was not the trailer. I mean, that was the news story, but what really thrilled and surprised audiences was that freaking actual live BB-8. Rolling out on stage. All right, number three, crafting creatures.
Oh, see, this one's odd. I'm going to say blue milk because depending on what they give me, this could be Carillion Ale or Total Poodoo.
Yeah.
Now, if crafting the creatures of Maz's Cantina, for example, if they're considering alien species as creatures, then I would be totally Carillion Ale this. But if then, it's just like that big pig that Finn had to share a water bowl with, I'm going to go poo-doo.
If this is 30 minutes of Simon Pegg pontificating on Star Wars, then it might be a little bit more in the poodoolerly direction, to make it a word. All right. Blueprint of a Battle, The Snow Fight.
Oh, Carillion Ale.
Carillion Ale. Yeah, that'll be an interesting one because that's the editing, especially upon repeating viewings, the editing was need a little bit of cleaning up in that final battle, just in terms of the pace.
I'm very curious about a lot of different things in that regard. I mean, you know, the audiobook and the novelization, how certain wounds get inflicted, certain speeder scenes and people coming across the Falcon and stuff. There's a lot there that editorially could have made the film better or was deliberate. I mean, it's hard to say.
That's true. And I don't want to make too hasty a judgment just for like as a self-contained film. And we'll break it down once the Blu-ray comes out, especially here on the show, as to like some of the specific editing choices that I feel like that kind of made it a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit of a staggered pacing, a little bit of a pacing that kind of would take you out of as soon as it would get momentum one direction, it would kind of cut to the next scene. But we'll get into that details later. We're here to talk about these special features. All right, here we go. The visual magic of the Force.
Carillion Ale.
Yeah,
as long as they don't pull a Clone Wars Secrets of Mortis and say, "Well, we're not going to tell you," because that would really tick me off.
That was a very cheeky special feature. Remember?
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, on the season, what is it? Four, I think. Blu-ray.
I think it was four or five. Yeah, it was four. I believe
it was basically. We're not the Secrets of Mortis revealed or whatever it was called. And it was like, let's not get into that. Although, frankly, though, totally sympathize with the perspective because the Mortis trilogy is such a highly subjective and controversial. Like, you either hated those series of Clone Wars episodes or you loved them.
Yeah.
And I fall into one category. That's all I'm going to say. All right. John Williams, The Seventh Symphony.
I'm going to say Carillion Ale.
Thank you, sir. I was worried. Carillion Ale, 100%. If you didn't say that after listening to the last John Williams segment.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the music's good, and he gives you such great insight as to how he crafted each one, especially when you think about the library of music he already has created.
Of course, I'd have a sneaking suspicion of this one. Deleted scenes.
Blue Milk. I'm like, okay.
Really?
I get that they got to.
Really?
I get that they got to trace and do everything the same, but I'm of the opinion, you know, we're in an era of director's cuts and things like that. Give me a cut that I can watch where this stuff's added. The deleted scenes, like the problem I have here is I have a feeling it's just going to be a small tidbit of stuff that was deleted. There were scenes from the book and scenes in the trailer that didn't make the film, and there's even deleted scenes of Maz bringing down the roof that didn't make it into the book and audiobook. So, I mean, I don't know. I would rather have a director's cut that added a lot of that stuff and added a lot more to the story. You know, because in a lot of ways, when I think of Legends and I think of Stover's Revenge of the Sith, it's like a director's cut of the film.
Let's be honest.
It adds so much awesomeness to it.
Let's be honest.
That's what I like.
When J.J. Abrams publicly jokes and says at a press conference that, and I quote, in reference to the to a stinger scene at the end of the credits, no, all of the scenes are going to actually be in the movie. And then they go on to say that, no, all of the deleted scenes are going to be separate. This is the film. It's the definitive film. We're not doing any alternate versions. I feel like he's being a little precious. I feel like give the fans an option to see an extended cut of the film. And I think, I don't know, it's so weird because I feel like as a director, if you're given the opportunity to produce what you think is a better film for the home video market, do it. I mean, like, it worked in
Well, Peter and people are going to take like Lord of the Rings, you know,
exactly.
The special editions there are those that don't like it and those that do. But at the end of the day, you can pick which one is your favorite. And I think that's what I like about it. I mean, like deleted scenes to me always felt hollow because think again about episode 3. You know, we see Shaak Ti's death in a deleted scene. And yet we've seen later in the game that wasn't her death. And then we saw later in the TV show that wasn't her death. And, you know, they're always changing what it was. Deleted scenes don't really matter. But at least if it was its own director's edition, it would matter to you, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a personal thing, I guess.
I hear it. Well, and it's, deleted scene, unless it's Attack of the Clones, in which case, let's all forget about those. Remember those? Remember the Meet the Parents edition of Attack of the Clones?
Oh, yeah.
Well, and so I guess it's, I don't feel too strongly about it other than
to say, there's a storm brewing, Eddie. It's her daddy.
He's
coming
Eddie.
For you.
If I could have both, I would, as a fan, I would appreciate having both options, but, you know, I don't feel as strongly as it would be for, there are editing issues with the film, but I will say this, just to be absolutely clear, I don't think that the deleted scenes would fix all of that, so we have to say that. But, and finally, Force for Change, your thoughts, sir.
What do you get? Blue
Milk.
It's not really something
that
I would
that
really
very
want
dismissive
as my
blue
special
milk.
Edition features. I like, you know, it's a heartwarming thing, so that's kind of cool. But bonus feature wise, I don't know. I'm gonna go back to like Lord of the Rings, the special edition stuff there. You know, the appendices and stuff, and all the information about how they built the sets and things like that. Those are the kind of things I would like to get as my special features. You know,
great,
I could care less about a couple deleted scenes.
It was a great effort. You know? But I feel like we've already seen most of what we would want to see because we see all these great behind-the-scenes videos during the production of Force for Change.
True.
But there's a whole market out there. And again,
cool.
I feel like this should be said now. We're the nerds. We're the big fans. These deleted scenes, like a lot of the people buying the Blu-ray or DVD may not even know what Force for Change is or what it did. So maybe that'll actually get the word out a few times. So that would be kind of cool. I think... Unfortunately, Mark, for time's sake, good Lord, we got to cut it short, but that doesn't mean that we don't have time for one. Let's do one more segment.
It's worth a lot to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Boba's Bounty.
As you wish.
As you wish. As you wish. I used the StarWars.com soundboards, and I kind of, in some ways, I wish we had the old voice, I do prefer Temuera Morrison, and that isn't just because he said this.
That's Jango Fett signing off with a little Georgia.
But that might be part of it. It's Boba's Bounty. Each week we highlight something that we have been doing, reading, experiencing that we like in the Star Wars community, and that's been going on. And this week is a little bit, I feel like, weird about making the selection, but if I'm being intellectually honest, I have to, and that is the silver screen edition of Star Wars. Questionable legality, certainly, up in the air as to whether the folks have the right to do what they did in terms of the leak, but I think what they did in terms of the project is noble. So if you don't know what this is, the Star Wars silver screen edition was a film restoration project by this anonymous internet conglomerate of some sort that calls themselves Team Negative One. They discovered an original 35mm print of the 1977 edition of Star Wars and decided that it was time to restore it and release it to the world, evidently. And it's still up in the air, so I'm sure. I think it was probably intentional. They may have said, oh, it accidentally leaked to all the torrent sites. Oops! But the reality is that there's been a long, especially in the early days of podcasting, I was often on the side of, hey, why are you guys complaining so much? You have the theatrical edition. It was released on the 2004 DVDs. What's wrong with those? Or maybe it's 2060. I don't remember what year exactly. But suffice to say, I've never felt too strongly. If you listen to the episode with David Collins last week, I've never been that guy who's like, release the original version or die. Mm-hmm. But I will say this. I haven't watched all of it. In fact, I'm going to probably this week. We have some family members in town. I'll be just totally to get real for a second, Mark. There was a death in the family this last week, and so a lot of family are coming in, and it's going to be a time of getting together, as it always is. It's going to be bittersweet. But I'm actually looking forward to spending some time with family, and I think this might have to be a good go-to activity when we have some time together, is maybe screen this original 1977 edition and finally kind of get that under my belt. That would be really cool to finally see what people saw in 1977. And I respect that. I like the idea of having that option out there. We were kind of talking about that with The Force Awakens. I like the idea of having the option of seeing the original version of Star Wars cleaned up to the best that they could with this print. It's not perfect, but man, it's pretty good. And as someone who's never had the opportunity to see that original version that was released in 1977, that's amazing. And I used to say, well, you could just watch it on that Laserdisc rip. But the Laserdisc rip is not a very high resolution copy. It's not the exact aspect ratio. So it's not exactly what you would have seen in 1977. So this is about as close as we're ever going to get until maybe Lucasfilm or Disney does something. But it's the kind of passion that Star Wars fans have, and now it's out there in the ether. So I'm looking forward to actually digging deep and kind of actually going through it all the way. I've already kind of flipped through some scenes, and it's very interesting to see some of the color correction that's not there, and some of the editing that's very different, and the audio quality that's not there at all. The audio is really different. It's surprising how much. It's degraded, first of all, but that's to be expected. But even the editing of the audio isn't as sharp, and there are some noticeable differences. Because I know back in the day in 97, Ben Burtt totally redid all that from scratch, pretty much. So this is different than like the despecialized edition, which is more of a simulation of the original. This is an actual rescan and restoration of a 35mm print. So it's really cool. And I hate to say that. But in terms of legality, it's not really been decided one way or the other. No lawsuits have been filed yet that I'm aware of. But it's interesting. This is Star Wars Silver Screen Edition, Team Negative One. It's a really interesting part of fandom, and we live in the age where this can happen, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, and what's funny about it is I actually heard about this through my mom, who is one of those fans that wanted the 77 version. My mom has kind of been done with Star Wars ever since Lucas went back and tinkered with it.
Mark, there's a pattern in your family.
It's weird.
There's a pattern here.
and so like she brought that up to me and I dismissed her. I was up on the hill on Snowcapades at the time, you know, doing the snow caving. I'm like, oh no, that's an old thing. Like Lucas said he's lost a long time ago, you know. And sure enough, lo and behold, she was right. Tell my mother she was right.
So
that might be something I might point her to. Like, hey, you might want to actually check that out. I haven't got her to watch the new movie yet because she doesn't like going into theaters. But
you did get your dad to watch
Blu-ray, I'm going to be like, you're going to watch this now.
And Mr. Skeptical Riley was all like, prepare yourself, Mark. You're going to be disappointed. Probably shouldn't do it. Don't force it. But you went out and saw it with your dad, and you mentioned it off air, but I want you to let the American public forget that. No, the Star Wars public. Did your dad like The Force Awakens?
Yeah, he actually he liked it a lot. He was more impressed than I mean, I came out of there. I was like starting to sweat at certain points. Like, oh God, here we go. Is he going to hate it? Is he going to love it? Is he going to okay? Right on. Yeah, he's got all the right reactions. Yeah,
uh-huh. There you go.
Which leads me to my bounty, which is you know, last night I watched it again for like I think about the 22nd time. I took one of my coworkers who was waiting to watch it with me. He hadn't seen it yet, and he knew, you know, I brought him over to my house, and he saw my collection. He's like, dude, we got to go watch this movie together. And so now that I got the theater, you know, I work in there, I got a pass. So I was able to take one person with me. So I'm like, dude, we'll go tonight. You know, we went and, you know, I was watching his reactions to it and stuff. It was great because, like, at the moment when Kylo Ren and Finn are fighting and stuff, he's like, oh, he's the Jedi after all. He's the Jedi. No, okay, he's not the Jedi. He's not the Jedi after. I was laughing so hard. I was like, oh, this is great. Like, he was having some priceless reactions. But same with my father. Like, by the time they went and saw it, I had read the book and I'd listened to the audiobook.
Oh, you're prepared.
And so, yeah, I was like leaning over and like the theaters were kind of emptied out at this point. So I was able to like, you know, tell him, like when me and Darnell went and watched it last night, it was just me and him and one lady that was sitting way up in the front row and we were just sitting towards the back. So I was like, you know, like when they were doing the torture chamber scene and stuff, I'm like, you're going to watch a moment when like she like slides into him, like it's explained in the book. And he's like, oh, okay. You know, and so like he's watching that and then you know, like I was talking with my dad after the fact, and I was talking to him too during the whole Kylo and his dad scene. And a lot of people were complaining about how, you know, well, she's so rookie and yet she took him down. It's like, well, the book explained how when he does the act with Solo, he thought it was going to make him stronger, and it had the opposite reaction. It made him weaker. And this is coming on the heels of the fact that Rey was able to slip into his own mind and shake him up with his own force abilities. You know, he's the master of the Knights of Ren, but his training under Snoke is still incomplete. So, you know, he's got that, like, faith in his dark side connection and the worry of the light and stuff being confronted by Rey. Then he goes and he tries to, you know, do this act with Solo that's supposed to help strengthen his connection to the dark, and it weakens him. And in the book, he drops to his knees, and that's when he gets shot by the bowcaster, which was, I think that would have been a more impactful way for that to have played out. Mm-hmm. Because, like, when the bowcaster shoots people, like, it flings them back. So when we watch it in the film, it's like Kylo Ren takes the shot, but he doesn't move. He just drops to his knees. It's like in the book, the way it plays out, it's like, okay, there's one more thing that's really hurting, you know, him, and he's punching it, trying to get the fuel off of it and stuff. Then he's fighting with Finn, who does have some training in martial arts. You know, he's got some hand-to-hand training as a stormtrooper and stuff, and he gets that whole stab to his arm, which, of course, once that happens, he's like, I'm done playing. And the book explains that really well. I'm done playing with him. Boom, boom, two shots, Finn's down, which, of course, in the book, he gets a slash to the stomach. The film, it's a slash to the back. Well, those all changes. But when Rey comes in, you know, she does that whole moment where Maz had told her, you know, close your eyes and feel the light around you. And when Kylo's telling her, you know, you need a teacher, she thinks about that.
You need
a teacher. She closes her eyes. And bam, dude, I mean, the book talks about how all of a sudden there's like this berserker moment where Kylo's completely taken by surprise by the ferocity of the attack. But she's totally embraced in the light in that moment. And it's really cool how, you know, when you have that extra knowledge of it, you know, it explains it more. But I don't know. It's like I felt like I was a guide for these guys when they were watching it. So by the time they came out, like, they were really enjoying those different changes. But when Rey's standing over Kylo and she does that strike to his face and stuff, in the book, you see it say, kill him, in big bold and stuff. In the audiobook, you hear Snoke do it. Mm. And what's always, I thought it was interesting, is also in the book and the audiobook, Leia, when she's talking to Han, says, you know, Snoke's been watching Ben since he was born. And to think that, well, if Rey happens to be a Skywalker or a Solo, either one, if she happens to be a descendant of Anakin Skywalker, odds are she's being watched by Snoke as well. Even hidden, her presence is being felt somehow, some way, and he was able to dial in on that. It's a really cool angle that the book and the audiobook presents, you know, and we were talking about that, and it just got us talking, both my dad and my friend Darnell, for like almost 40 minutes just going on about, you know, the ways that they could have played it and the angles that going forward into episode 8, you know, they could go with it. Because, you know, both of them are like, well, who do you think she is? You know, is she a Skywalker? And I'm like, that's the direction I'm kind of hoping, but there's so many different angles that can play here, man. It's awesome.
I'll tell you what, man. It's the important takeaway, though, is he liked it. He enjoyed himself.
Yes, so
take,
he did.
Take that, negative blogs. Take that, you little nerds. Just film nerds saying, well, I really thought the editing was a little bit off. No. Although I should be careful, because that's literally exactly what I was saying earlier. But suffice to say, though, seriously, it's a great film, and the pick-aparts are legitimate. But overall, it's great to see that he was able to sit back and enjoy himself. And that's your pick, The Force Awakens, for Boba's Bounty, which is actually a nice one, because we can wrap up. Like, we're nearing the end of the theatrical run. So, yeah, just one last hurrah. I'm planning to, this weekend or next, get in the theater one more time, and then maybe a couple times if it hits a second run theater. But that's what we're going to be doing. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Unfortunately, you hear the music. I'm pulling an Oscar thing, which is appropriate for this weekend as we record. And I'm playing us out because we are out of time. Yep, Blessed Cheesemaker in the chat. It's one last time.
Harder, faster, more intense.
We'll roll through this real fast. Again, thanks everyone supporting us at our Patreon. You can do so, patreon.com/StarWarsReport. Email us, StarWarsReport@gmail.com. It's Facebook/StarWarsReport, Twitter/StarWarsReport, and StarWarsReport.com/iTunes. We do appreciate the ratings and reviews. Folks, another week, another podcast, another episode of the Star Wars Report. Folks, you know what it is. It's the it's 1 hour of pure, unadulterated Star Wars awesomeness. Thanks to Aljon Go. He is the Jedi Mouseketeer. You can check him out, JediMouseketeer.com. That's all. Remember, many Bothans died to bring you this podcast. Woo!
That's a wrap.
Many Bothans died to bring you this podcast.
Remember that? Remember that?
Yeah.
Hey, also...
That's still glorious.
That's Jango Fett signing off with a little Georgia.
All right. Let me turn off the live stream. Folks who jumped in, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And we'll catch you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Toodaloo.
All right, we are off air, and then let me wrap up the podcast version. Folks, again, thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you guys later. So long.
Catch you later, Bill and Ted.
I feel like, hang on, what do we need? What do you think? Well, we'll talk off air. We'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.